Well, if you're new to our conversation in regards to the Enneagram and how it informs our practice of Lent, be sure to go back to our previous episodes where we talked with Aaron about what is Lent, what are the rhythms of Lent, and then also we had a secondary episode where we walked through each of the nine types and what it looks like for feasting and fasting in order to accomplish the things that you're really hoping to address regarding your relationship with Christ, but using the practice of Lent. And so now, this particular episode, it's a shorter episode for us, but we wanted to offer you a little bit more insight for those of you who've kind of picked up the baton and decided to practice Lent this year, but doing it through the lens of the Enneagram. So, Aaron, based upon your experience, what are some of the earlier trends and thought patterns that people have when they first start get going in Lent?
Yeah, I think it can be a lot of different things. I think there is a lot of gung-ho-ness, like, all right, I'm doing something new. This is so exciting. I'm going to kill it, you know, and there's a novelty to it. Or there is a, existential dread that accompanies it. And that will like manifest itself, I think, in kind of forgetting that you have, decided to fast from this thing, in that you're just sort of putting it in the back of your head, like, I didn't say it out loud. So maybe that means it's not real. Like maybe I'm not actually doing this. And so I think some people find themselves on like one end of that spectrum. And those are kind of the overarching attitudes that we see at the beginning of Lent.
What's interesting, even to capture what those initial thought patterns are, whether maybe it's revealing this kind of triumphalism in your heart, like, this is going to be awesome. I can knock this out. I'm going to kill it.
Yeah.
Jesus is going to be so proud of me, and people are going to admire my new relationship with Jesus. Or even the dread that I can imagine, you know, that that is a way of relating and seeing the world. Mm-hmm. And so there may be some fear regard, but think about other areas of your life where you've experienced that kind of dread or fear. So even those early experiences become opportunities for you to engage with God. You know, don't waste an emotion. Don't waste a thought. Bring it back to your Heavenly Father and help him, as David prayed, search me and know me and lead me in a way everlasting.
Yeah. Well, it reminds me of what Jack Miller always said.
Yeah. What particular one was that?
Well, that you are, cheer up, you're far more worse than you ever knew and imagined, but cheer up, you are far more loved than you ever could dream.
Yeah, I like that.
And, you know, that's true, guys. Like, we know the end game, the end of the story is that Christ won the victory, that he has provided and secured a right relationship for us with him. That is taken care of. That is done. That is what is true. We are his most beloved child, who we are a co-heir with Christ. And so when we know the end game, as we go through this, whether feeling triumphant or like kind of wanting to back away, know that you are being cared for intimately by him. He knows you. He knows your perspective on life. He knows where you're going to struggle. And he is intimately walking with you in this whole process. And as we dive into this episode, really kind of what we're, you know, focusing in on is, this is the, like, if people are listening to this on the day it's released, we're just 2 days into Lent. And so, Aaron, can you kind of, you know, kind of paint a picture of where they're at and kind of where they might be heading in this upcoming week as they experience Lent?
Yeah. So at this point, you will not have even experienced a full week of Lent. It's like a truncated version of a week, because we'll have started on Ash Wednesday. And then if you are observing Lent in a particular tradition that allows for feast days, or if you're choose your own adventuring Lent and you want to celebrate feast days on Sunday, that means that you can break your fast on Sunday. And that's just sort of this like little amuse-bouche of like an appetizer for the coming joy. Like, it's just a reminder that's set into the Lent schedule of, hey, it's like, you're anticipating and moving your soul towards the upcoming joy of Easter. And so they drop that little feast day in on Sundays. Pro tip, do not fast from Chick-fil-A and then hope that you can have a feast day. That is a huge bummer, by the way.
That is hilarious.
Yeah, yes. So done that before, an unfortunate thing. But
or feast from buying decorations or crafts from Hobby Lobby.
Exactly.
Same thing.
I gotta be honest. I mean, one of the things that I have an interesting relationship with is buying books on Amazon.
Oh.
I love reading. I love books. I love having books that I might read one day, but at least I know I have it. But I can literally see myself
prepared, Jeff.
Fasting from buying books when someone recommends a book, but on Sunday, just filling my cart up, and on Tuesday, books just come.
Go into town.
It's almost like Harry Potter and yeah. those letters coming into his house. It's just Amazon books coming in through every window.
I read something that was like book buying and book reading are two completely different hobbies. So you need to respect them both in that way. So
yes.
Gosh. If everyone could just see how many books we have, and then the dance we've had over the years is, okay, because I too love learning, but I like learning from what's called the Jeff McCord Cliff Notes version, where he reads it and he then gives me the Cliff Notes.
That's a good arrangement, quite frankly.
No,
that's
it pretty, is fabulous. That's pretty good. But I would always be like, okay, we have like 3,000 volumes of books. And how many of these have you actually read? Well, Beth, that one's a reference book. And that's, I know that I'll need that if this happens or if that happens. And I'm like, uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. Sure.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you are affirming of my appreciation of books and recognize me as a wise husband who has well read.
Yes. Absolutely.
Good spin, Jeff. That okay. was a good spin. Yeah, I'm impressed. Spin.
That's right. That's right.
Well,
okay. Yeah, that's a big aside, but I feel like yeah. if at that time I do choose to set aside books, I feel it in my body not be able to yeah. respond to that. Mm-hmm. But I know that I'm going to foolishly, but you know, the way Jeremiah says, describes our sin, that we are skillful at evil. So I am not a rookie sinner. I've got some years of experience. I'm going to find a way.
You put the reps in.
Book.
Yeah. I get it. Well, and I think part of that too is even in that moment of, oh my gosh, here's a new book. I'm going to go buy it. Or here's something that I've been wanting is that moment of maybe I am going to save it till Sunday, but it is more of a, okay, well, what's that teaching me? Like, why did I just immediately go to that book? Like, what is it that is like pursuing me or stirring me to go make that purchase? And so if I instead don't buy it and write it down on a list, and then on Sunday when I have, you know, my feast day and I can break my fast, do I still want these? Is this still something that I'm interested in? Or, you know, something like that. I think it's that exercise in the moment too.
Yes. And that's where go back to the core motivations. We did that in the last two episodes. Also, you can download the core motivations for each type in a free PDF at yourenneagramcoach.com/core motivations. And then you can have that right in front of you as to why do I feel this? What is going on at the core? Is this a core fear, a core desire, a weakness, or a longing? And then how does Christ satisfy this for me?
Well, for this next section, what we thought we'd do just briefly is to bring attention to one of the aspects of the Enneagram called the focus of attention for each type. Because the way in which we approach sanctification or Christian life is often through the lens of our type, which in some ways puts us into the same ruts, the same patterns of why we don't change. And so, you know, we have to get outside of ourselves in order to bring change into our life. And so, Bethy, as you go through each of these types, and then maybe Aaron, if you have any additional thoughts and patterns that you've seen with people, you can comment after each one.
Yeah. So this is your primary focus of attention. So when you walk into a room or you experience something, your personality just kind of naturally focuses in on these things. And these aren't bad or right. It is, it, it's what is. But when our heart is misaligned with the truth of the gospel, it can go awry and it can spin us out and put us down a wrong path that we've landed in the same kind of pitfalls that we're actually wanting to be aware of right now. So, but then when our heart is aligned with the truth of the gospel, the same focus of attention can bring us back into glorifying God from those same aspects that we actually attribute or have inside us that can reflect him and his glory. And so for type ones, when you are in a situation, your focus of attention is naturally to see errors so that you can reform and improve what's happening around you.
So Aaron, how might that be both a gift, but also a way of sabotaging growth during Lent?
I think it's that aspect of reliance on Christ, especially Lent is such an introspective season. And so whereas one might naturally see errors and want to reform and improve other people, I think that could be potentially turned inward on them. I think there's like an idea that like, if I tweak this, if I get up a little earlier, if I make all these little adjustments, then I will be perfect or at least functionally perfect. And so, but it's that reliance on Christ that I think, might suffer a little bit in this instance. So that's where I would pay attention to that.
So remember, for what type ones, the invitation here is that upon seeing errors, what are you naturally inclined to do? Mm. Are you going to try to fix yourself? Are you going to try to fix someone else? Or let this be an opportunity for you to connect with Christ in regards, how do I relate to a fallen world? Mm-hmm. Let's go to type two.
All right, type twos. When you're in a situation, you're going to naturally focus on other people's needs and to help them in some form or fashion so that you can get approval.
Aaron, do you see twos in your community now that you kind of reflect back through the lens of the Enneagram and how they respond to other people and their experiences of Lent?
Yeah, I think twos are so outwardly focused that the introspection is often a little like challenging for them. Not in a bad way, just I'm so used to meeting the needs of the people in my community that I don't genuinely know what even mine are. And so I think that is something that will rise to the surface with Lent for a two.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Moms, I am so excited to share with you a huge and wonderful opportunity that we have created for you this summer. It's our Enneagram for Moms cohorts. Yes, a group of moms of your same Enneagram type coming together for a safe place to connect, share, and hear and be validated. Wouldn't that be amazing to be with other moms of your same Enneagram type who see the world through the same lens and truly understand you? It's going to be amazing. But here's the thing. There are only 25 spots per cohort. We have one in the daytime and one in the evening of your type to choose from. But you're going to want to sign up the day it opens. We open registration May 6th to May 13th. Now, these groups will kick off the week of June 10th, and they will go until the week of July 29th. That's 8 weeks together for 90 minutes sharing, laughing, crying, being together in that safe, intimate place to connect with moms to develop deep, meaningful friendships. And there's so many other things that are going to come with the cohort. I hope that you will join us and learn more when you sign up on May 6th to May 13th at yourenneagramcoach.com/cohorts. I can't wait to see you there.
And Bethy, you talk about this often. Twos don't feel their own feelings. They feel the feelings of others.
Yeah.
And so it is tough for them to be self-reflective.
Yeah, absolutely. This is just going to be a great exercise for those feelings to bubble up, and it's going to be very uncomfortable. And they're going to feel as if they need permission to feel them and experience them. And that is what the Lord wants. So we don't need permission from people. We need to know that God is calling us to experience our true emotions and needs and to reflect on that. Mm-hmm. All right. Type threes, when you are in a situation, you're going to naturally focus on the tasks at hand and to accomplish them so that you can receive praise. Erin, I'll let you go for this because this is your type.
This is my type. I think, you know, I understand this idea of like, we don't want our faith and in this particular experience with Lent to be a part of a checklist. It's not a box to tick. So I think what's hard for a three is going to be letting go of getting pats on the back, like the glorification of approval that we need so much and how we built it up in our own head about, I need people to tell me that I'm doing a good job. I need a cookie. Like, what is my spiritual cookie in this? And so I think that could be something that threes would really need to pay attention to in this.
Yeah. And, you know, I think also they're going to really struggle because it's like, well, I mean, we obviously threes, you need to accomplish certain things in your life. Like we're not saying to sit on the couch.
Right.
We're saying to receive praise and recognition and admiration from people so that you can actually receive the love and knowing that you are worth Christ's death on the cross because of how much he loves you for just you. That's what we're wanting you to focus in on.
Yeah. And not other people, I think. Oh, that right. just nourished me. Beth just nourished me. I'm getting teary.
I love that. All right. So type fours, when you are in a situation, you are naturally going to focus on seeing what is missing and then longing to try to fulfill what is missing with some kind of depth, authenticity, and beauty.
Oh, see, I love what you said here about like fulfill that ongoing longing. I think that is such an innate part of Lent is the longing of, because you're longing for the, you know, the resolution of the story. Lent is like kind of getting dropped in media res in a story. Like this stuff is already happening. And you kind of talked about it in the previous episodes about like, when you know the ending to a story, it allows you to view the story through a lens of hope, no matter how bad it gets. And I think that is, that's such a crucial exercise for fours specifically, just because this Lent is about the longing. It is about the moving towards ultimate beauty and ultimate depth and true joy. And so I think that focus can enrich a four's Lenten experience in a way that maybe others aren't capable of accessing. They are capable. I don't mean that, but just, they just see things with such a unique lens. I think it's such a depth for them.
You know, it's interesting. And this is very nuanced, but it is the gift I can see of four enjoying going through Lent, and experiencing longing. I think the difficulty for fours is, how do I address it when something is broken? Because it can lead towards shame. It can lead towards self-pity, or it can be redemptive to actually move towards others with kindness. And so as fours, you're going to be naturally gifted for under self-observation, but also recognizing that this is just not an endeavor, just the end game that is just the feeling, but it's actually intended to move you closer to Christ.
Well, because they're longing for what's missing. And what they feel is missing is the culmination of Christ's finished work. And so we want them to fixate their eyes, their heart on what Christ completed on their behalf, and that nothing is missing in that regard, that they are fully known. They are fully loved and seen for exactly who they are, that there's nothing missing there. Now, yes, we're on this side of heaven, and so they're still going to long. You know, we still have sin that we're wrestling with here on earth, but the end game what we already have is that Christ has brought to us the completion of all things and the beauty of the reconciliation, the restoration of our soul. So that's what we're wanting them to focus on here. All right, type fives, you are going to focus on detaching and observing from a distance so that you can maintain boundaries and privacy. So when you're in a given situation, that's going to rise up because you're afraid of being absolutely depleted from intrusions or interactions with others and feeling, you know, maybe incompetent or incapable. So Erin, what would you, you know, and what we're hoping that they'll do is engage with others to not be as isolated, what would you encourage them?
I would say leaning into that depletion is, while it feels counterintuitive, is where you will find true reliance on Christ. And so I would challenge fives to really just push into that and go, what happens when I get to the end of my energy reserves? What happens when I no longer can no longer be strong, or I can no longer be, you know, in charge or whatever. I think there's a pushing past that you, it's like Reepicheep when he's like further out and further in. It's the same thing for fives. I think if you push past where you would normally feel comfortable, you're going to find a new land where Christ is your sole reliance.
Awesome.
One of the other things too that comes to mind is, it may be tempting for a five to be an observer rather than a participant. But to, as Beth mentioned, to engage, mm-hmm. it's not just simply something to observe that other people are doing, but it's to engage yourself into the process.
Mm-hmm. All right. Sixes, when you're in a situation, your natural focus of attention is anticipating potential negative outcomes and how you're going to respond to them. Erin, what would you say?
Yeah. So one of my dearest friends is a six, and she talks about pre-grief a lot and how she will kind of like almost pre-game sad feelings or nervous feelings or anxious feelings, even when she doesn't feel them. I don't know if that's familiar to you, Jeff. Maybe. I don't know.
Oh, man, he's shaking his head.
Sat right in my kitchen like, oh man, I totally pre-game everything. Yeah. Yeah. I've never thought of that term, which makes it more redemptive because I'm experiencing more shame right now.
No shame. But, no shame.
But I was an athlete, so yeah, I want to pregame. I want to prepare for Beth's death so that it won't be as intense.
But
we'll
when
we'll
be it comes. So sad when we get there.
We just went there.
Oh, that was my immediate thought. Like, oh man, how much time do I prepare? Like, oh, I'm going to be so sad if Beth were to ever die. That's going to be horrible. I'm just pregaming.
You're just pregaming.
Well,
you're just,
good news. Here's the end game. Good news. I will actually live forever.
Oh, that's
there you go.
News.
Boom.
I just Jesus
juke hardcore. I love it.
A little suspicious.
Oh, man. So I think for them, kind of letting go of that tendency and, or not even letting go of it, maybe even acknowledging it is a good first step, I think would be helpful. And to pay attention to what that's doing to your practice of Lent. Are you so anxious in it that you're afraid that God is going to teach you something irrevocable that you can't ignore, that you're going to have to change your life, or you're going to have to change the way you interact with people or anything like that, I think is something to pay attention to.
That's awesome.
Well, thanks, Erin.
I'm so sorry. This is just payback for all the times I've been listening to your podcast. Just being like, no, how do they know? Make it go away.
Exactly. Well, it's funny because we do this all the time, but whenever it's about our type, it hits, you know, it just, yes. It's so amazing.
It's tough. It's tough.
Yeah. As it's our good. Pastor friend used to say, you delivered the mail.
Yep.
So you delivered the mail.
Good All right, job. Seven. So when you are in a situation, your focus of attention is best case thinking to ensure satisfaction for yourself. So Erin, what would you say to them?
Yeah. In my community that I've done around Lent, I found sevens are the most naturally resistant to Lent. And I think it's because, you know, it's dark
and it's hard.
It's hard and it's not always like a good time. And I get that.
Right.
So I think it's very just leaning into that and saying, I am okay. I don't have to have like a positive answer to everything. I don't have to put a bow on anything. I can just, this sometimes is the worst and sometimes I hate it. And okay. Mm-hmm. Like I can live with that.
Well, and to paint a picture for sevens out there, think of the movie Inside Out. You mm-hmm. know, the whole point of the story is really the very end where he or she was trying to get rid of sadness the whole time and just have joy. And yet you really need all of it. You need to experience all of the emotions, all the experiences of life to really feel the abundant joy that Christ has given us. So just kind of paint that as a picture that, yes, you're naturally inclined to push away negativity or emotional pain and only stay with best case thinking or reframing. But this is particularly a season that God is calling you to experience the full gamut of life and to see that the end game, the end of the story is hope. The end of the story is restoration. The end of the story is that abundant joy that we desire, but we also have right now. Mm-hmm. All right. So type eights, when they are entering into a situation, their focus of attention is protecting themselves and others from being controlled, vulnerable, and at the mercy of injustice.
So I think a thing that I've noticed with eights who join my community is that they don't like being told what to do at all. And so they are naturally resistant to any kind of, sometimes they're naturally resistant to suggestion of, hey, what if you look at it this way? I think that's just, this is like a really vulnerable time. And I think that can let an eight's kind of warning signs go off and they might retreat in a way that will not be helpful in a vulnerability and reliance on Christ kind of way. And so, I would ask them to look for that.
Mm-hmm. You know, for eights, it's very easy for eights to write things off. Like if it's not what they thought or not working or, perhaps even personally challenging, they'll just move on.
Sure.
And eights, this may be an opportunity for you that whenever that inclination starts to arise and to simply write it off, dismiss it and move on, to engage with it. Why is it so easy for you, or why are you naturally inclined to want to disengage?
Yeah.
Great. All right. Type nines, we're up. So when we enter a situation, our natural focus of attention is to see others' agendas, wants, desires, and to move in, to merge, to try to keep the peace. So we're just focused on, our body scans the room and we just kind of know the mood. Is there conflict? Is everyone okay? And then we're trying to focus on others' agendas to keep the peace. So Erin, what would you say for them?
So my husband is an Enneagram 9 and he likes to refer to himself as the jewel of the Enneagram. So, if you need to borrow that, that's fine. But what I've noticed is that there is this desire to, and I think this can be true for other types as well, but it is something that I noticed with nines, is to kind of be looking more outward and seeing how other people are responding and almost taking that on themselves and not having like a true experience of what they are experiencing as opposed to absorbing the experiences of others.
What just came to my mind is Jeff will say this all the time is you're reading me. And I'm like, yeah, when do I not read you? Like
that was something I'm not supposed to do.
I'm reading everything all the time, whether I'm intentionally reading or it's just coming at me. But being aware that we are constantly reading, that's how our bodies are wired. Our nervous system is wired that way. But being aware of it and then coming back inward and saying, what is God wanting me to, how does he want me to read this situation? Not necessarily what is the mood of this other person or the situation at hand. I can see that I feel that, but what is God calling me to observe and feel, and how can I bring the truth into myself? So I call it gospel self-truth, you know, speaking this gospel self-truth to myself and not trying to guess or read what other people are experiencing and feeling. Because if I, let's say, assert myself, you know, in this fast, like actually not negate myself, but actually assert myself, oh man, I'm going to read Jeff or whoever is around me. Like, it's just going to happen. Like, is he upset? Is he okay? You know, and I have to know I can
say. She doesn't even have to talk to me. She could just be sitting next to me like, hey, you got some weird energy.
Got some emanating off of you.
Get off of me. Like, stop reading.
Stop reading me. I'm like, well, and I said this last night. I'm like, well, I'm probably noticing something that you're actually experiencing that you're unaware of so far. And it happens all the time. Like 2 days later, he's like, oh yeah, now I see what's going on, you know?
Beautiful.
So nines, recognize that that is part of who you are, but when that happens, you know, recognize it, but then come inward and give yourself, you know, the gospel self-talk of what is true and who you are and that your presence, your voice, your talent, your abilities matter, and to assert yourself.
Well, this is, as everybody's entering into Lent, this is the honeymoon phase. You're ready to kill it. You're ready to learn a lot about yourself, learn a lot about who God is for us and the person and work of Jesus. It's going to be exciting. But Erin, just as a pregame on what's ahead for, and so that our listeners will just, and we're going to actually release another podcast to address some of these things, but why don't you share a little bit about what this next part of Lent will entail?
Yeah. You know, I highly recommend observing Lent with a buddy, like on a buddy system. I think it's helpful for encouragement. It's helpful for sustainability. So even if that is just like shooting a text or dropping a note in the mail or letting your buddy vent about how they foolishly chose to fast from Chick-fil-A and now they don't get it on feast, like whatever, you know, I think there is that communal aspect where, you know, if you are not a part of a congregation that's doing Lent, where you might feel like a little like adrift and on an island. And so I think that is a really helpful thing. And I think, again, like keeping that thesis statement of this is an invitation for me to draw closer to Christ. It's not a checklist. It's not a trophy. It's not an application I can show that I did it perfectly. It's an invitation. And so just keeping that in the forefront of your mind, I think, is going to help you to pay attention to the heart parts of Lent as opposed to the physical aspects of it.
That's awesome.
You know, and one of the things that I've noticed in my own life as I've participated in ACA, a recovery program, is that we have something called fellow travelers. Hmm. And it's interesting because as we check in with one another, whether it be a phone call, a text message, or going to a meeting, we can share, but there's a mutual commitment to not comment, fix, or suggest anything.
Yes.
It's just, hey, here is my morning reading. Here's something I learned. Or Beth and I just got into an argument and I really blew it. But you don't anticipate a response. It's just someone that you can check in on what you're experiencing, mm-hmm. whether it be a high or a low. And yeah. So it sounds like that's a great opportunity to really encourage you throughout all your experiences with Lent.
Well, Aaron, real quick, where can people jump in? Because you offer some great resources for Lent. Where can they jump in to join you and your community?
Yeah, so I would love for, I think that is like the best buddy system, especially right now, just because so many of us aren't meeting people in person. And so you can come join my community. It's at aaronhmoon.com/shop. I mentioned this in the last episode, but I have a 15% off code for your podcast listeners. Just use YEC at checkout for 15% off. But it is a place for people who are going to blow it, are not going to get it right, mm-hmm. but we're all journeying together. And we are creating community around this practice where we can support one another. And that takes a lot of different views and actions, but it's a really, it enriches the experience for me so much.
All right, guys. So March 12th, join us again, where we're going to be talking about hitting the wall. As you go through the marathon, you're going to start struggling. It's going to be hard. And we're going to reflect on what that wall looks like. So we will see you at that episode.
Bye, guys.